Hi everyone, my name is Julia Caldwell. I'm happy to present my project that I've been working on, Racial Ethnic Discrimination, Health Behaviors, and the Role of Religious Institutions in California. So I have no relationships to disclose. So just to give you a little background and justification for the project, research has acknowledged that religious institutions occupy a unique role in the social environment. Past studies have evidenced that congregations and religious institutions play an important role and occupy positions of power and influence within communities. Particularly in many low-income neighborhoods, places of worship provide institutional stability, often unknown in other areas of the community. Religious institutions have also historically aided in efforts to battle discriminatory laws and practices. Particularly in the African American community, the church is often seen as a center of spiritual, social, and political life. So often places of worship fill the institutional voids of society. Places of worship create civic spaces where people can gain knowledge and a sense of power and authority to be engaged citizens. But much of this research looking at the connection between religion and health has focused primarily on differences between black and white populations. Much of the research has identified that religion has a positive effect on health. Factors associated with the religious service itself, such as messages about overcoming and forgiving persecutors, may contribute to the positive buffering effect of discrimination on health. Resources may also be related to the sense of community that places of worship provide, rather than the service specifically. Religious institutions may be able to offer more emotional and instrumental social support when individuals experience psychological distress as a result of discrimination. With this positive buffering effect, it's compelling to consider the demographic changes that are occurring across the nation, particularly in California, with Asian American and Latino populations growing. I think priority needs to be given to understanding the role of religious institutions among these groups as well, who are often underserved, marginalized, and also experiencing discrimination. So with this background in mind, I took three objectives for this project. First, to describe the role that religious institutions play in improving health behaviors, including smoking, drinking, and walking. Number two, to differentiate the effect that religious attendance has on health behaviors among different racial ethnic groups. And finally, I wanted to see if I could determine if the relationship between discrimination and health behaviors is actually influenced or moderated by worship attendance. So with those objectives, I took three hypotheses. I thought that attending worship overall reduced the rate of smoking and drinking and increased rates of walking. Two, that religious attendance and its association to health behaviors varied by race, ethnicity. And finally, among minority populations in California, attending worship acts as a buffer to the negative effects of discrimination, leading to improvements in health behaviors. So, to test these hypotheses, I used the California Health Interview Survey from 2003. I used the adult survey. There's actually a child and adolescent survey as well, but that did not include any religion questions. So the total sample, actually, they surveyed over 45,000 households in 2003, and our final sample was almost 42,000 adults in California. The proxy interviews were excluded. The California Health Interview Survey actually has had many cycles after 2003, but this was the only year that a religion question was included. So I wanted to pick that one because I was really interested in the role of religion. So, but the California Health Interview Survey is a cross-sectional, population-based, random digit dial telephone survey, and it's conducted every 2 years. It's conducted in English, Spanish, Mandarin, Cantonese, Vietnamese, and Korean. In 2003, there was a 33.5% response rate, which is similar to other large national surveys such as BRIFIS. For my analysis, I applied jackknife replicate weights to accommodate for the survey design. These weights represent the 2000 U.S. Census-based population demographics and are adjusted for non-response and households without telephones. So basically what that means with those weights, this study is actually representative of the non-institutionalized population in California. All of my analysis were conducted in SAS. I first ran descriptive statistics for the entire population, then by health behavior, and I determined significant variables to include in my models through chi-squared tests. Then I ran a few models. One I ran for the total population, all race ethnicities. Then I stratified by race. And then a final model was one run by frequency of discrimination and worship attendance. So I'll go through each of those. Just to give you a sense of the measures, measuring basically kind of three constructs in this study. Racial discrimination, first, asked respondents, thinking about your race ethnicity, how often have you been treated badly or unfairly because of your race ethnicity? Never, rarely, sometimes, often, or all the time. Worship, I'm primarily interested in public religious affiliation. So this assessed worship of any type. So during the past 7 days, did you go to church, temple, or another place of worship for services or other activities? I had three primary health behaviors that I was interested. These are all binary outcomes, so I could run my logistic regression models. I looked at current smoking status, binge drinking, which was five drinks at one sitting for a male in the past 30 days and four drinks for women. And then the final one was a walking variable that looked at walking at least 10 minutes or more for any of the reasons. There was walking for fun or relaxation or walking the dog, things like that. So in my models, I controlled for race, ethnicity, age, gender, family type, education, poverty, and insurance status because these were all significant indicators when looking at health behaviors. So just to give you a brief description of the sample here, this is the weighted distributions of selected sociodemographic characteristics for the sample. As you can see, a majority of the sample are over the age of 40. I have a fairly even distribution of males and females. Over 30% of the sample is reports being Latino. I used the California Department of Finance definition of race, where Latino is actually considered a race category, so whites and all other racial groups are non-Latino. Over half of the sample has a high school degree or more. 15% live below the poverty line. 37% are single adults with no children, and over 16% do not have health insurance. Remember, this is in 2003. So, according to this graph, in 2003, almost 38% of Californians report attending worship in the past 7 days. African Americans and Pacific Islanders report the highest worship attendance, where whites and American Indian Alaska Natives report the lowest percentage. So remember, I'm interested in public religious affiliation, not religiosity or personal spirituality. But I think since I'm primarily interested in understanding worship, I thought it would be interesting to actually disaggregate some of these numbers. Since CHIS has such a large sample, I could actually tease out some of these groups. So actually among the Asian ethnic groups, you find actually a lot of wide variations. So Filipinos and Koreans are reporting very high worship attendance. Filipinos at 65% are attending worship, Korean 64%, whereas Japanese and Chinese have much lower, 23-27% are reporting worship. Among Latino ethnic groups, the variation isn't as drastic, but Central Americans report the highest rates of worship attendance. So here's some more descriptive statistics based on each of my health behaviors of interest. Just a brief summary here. Current smokers are more likely to be African American, binge drinkers more likely to be Latino, and whites are more likely to be walking for 10 minutes or more. As you can see, those who experience discrimination more frequently, more likely to have worse health behaviors. They're more likely to be current smokers, binge drinkers, and to not walk. And the final thing, in terms of worship attendance, those who attend worship have better health behaviors than those who do not. As you can see, 11% are current smokers compared to 20% who do not attend worship. Same holds true with binge drinking, and those who attend worship are more likely to be walking. So here's some results of my first couple models that I ran. The top line in bold is my regression model for the total population. So this is all races. So just as a reminder, this is presented in odds ratio. So if the odds ratio is above 1, this indicates there's an increased probability of having a specific behavior. If it's below 1, that means a decreased probability of having that behavior. If the confidence interval doesn't include 1, that means it's significant. So as you can see with that bold line, holding all of my constant selected demographic variables, the odds of engaging in healthy lifestyle behaviors significantly increased for those who attended worship compared to those who did not. Those who are attending worship are less likely to smoke with an odds ratio of 0.58, less likely to drink, and more likely to be walking. Now, if you look below, I stratified my models to compare races. Overall, there wasn't that much of a difference between the races. Controlling for my demographic factors, individuals who attended worship, no matter their race ethnicity, had decreased odds of being a current smoker and walking for exercise or fun. The only thing that's not significant I wanted to point out was actually binge drinking among African Americans and Asians. So I think that's an interesting finding. Okay, here's my second model. I'm going to present some graphs after so it's a little clearer, kind of a lot of numbers. But this is addressing my third objective about discrimination. And I created four groups here. And infrequent means infrequent discrimination, basically. That's discrimination never or rarely, whereas frequent is discrimination sometimes, often, or all the time. I excluded whites from these models because they were, a majority were experiencing no discrimination. So when you look at the adjusted odds ratios, worship does appear to be having a buffering effect. Those who have infrequent discrimination and attend worship have the best health behaviors, and the group with the worst health behaviors are those who have frequent discrimination and do not attend worship. So here's some charts. The star represents that it's significantly different from zero. So the blue charts bars are those who attended worship, whereas red are those who did not. As you can see the gradient a little bit more clearly here, I think. So those who are attending worship have a lower odds of not smoking, and then it just goes up from there. The same holds true with binge drinking. Those who are attending worship have a lower odds of not binge drinking, with those experiencing infrequent discrimination with the best health behaviors, followed by those with frequent discrimination and attending worship. Finally, the walking variable. Those who are attending worship have a higher odds of walking for 10 or more minutes. But actually, this is a little different from the other ones in that those who are experiencing frequent discrimination and went to church had better health. I don't think they're significantly different from each other, but it's kind of a little different. So to provide some strengths and limitations, I think the diversity of the sample is interesting. Asian with Asians and Latinos, along with other groups. CHIST, the sample that I used, is very good about oversampling underrepresented minority groups. And in the future, maybe they actually do county-level estimates, so I think that would be interesting to break it down that way. The worship question, I think, is a strength because it includes all types of worship, not just Protestant or Catholic questions, so like a lot of other studies do. But in terms of limitations, some researchers have identified that Americans overreport their church attendance, so that could be influencing my findings. I also have some measurement limitations. Religion is a complex phenomenon to measure, so definitely adding more questions that measure religion would be beneficial. And self-reported discrimination, obviously another complex construct. And I think it's important to make the distinction between self-reported discrimination and internalized discrimination. So in the future, I think maybe looking at things like allostatic load and how discrimination affects your body would be interesting. So my study is also cross-sectional in design, so you can't determine whether exposure to worship or discrimination occurred prior to the behaviors or vice versa. We also have to think about the time when the survey was administered. So worship attendance, right, fluctuates between seasons and holidays. And in the future, I'd like to consider, if my stats get that good, but hierarchical linear modeling, so I could actually test to see if it's a true moderator, worship attendance is. So we'll see. We have lots of potential here, I think. But so overall, worship attendance seems to be positively influencing healthy behaviors. When I stratified by race, all races that attend worship are less likely to smoke and more likely to walk for 10 minutes or more. But remember that African Americans and Asians, among those groups, worship attendance and its influence on binge drinking was not significant. So I think more research is needed to determine why this is the case. And finally, among minority populations in California, worship attendance does buffer the effects of discrimination on health behaviors. So those who are frequently experiencing discrimination and attending worship appear to have better health behaviors compared to those who experience discrimination and do not attend worship. So implications. I think a growing amount of individuals, I think particularly young adults, are questioning or even turning away from institutional religion. I think it's important to consider the role of public religious affiliation and its influence on health. Future steps that could be considered is looking at health behaviors and their association with the religious service itself and the emotional and instrumental social support that's provided for individuals in a congregation. I think there needs to be continued discussion of the role of public health in the faith community, and I think it's fascinating that public religious affiliation is playing such a large role in determining our health behaviors, particularly among groups that continue to be marginalized. We need to realize the important role that places of worship have in our community so we can help these populations lead healthier lives. So just a few acknowledgments. People at California Health Interview Survey, Pia Chaparro, Lois Takahashi, and Chandra Ford, my advisor. So thank you.
Asians, I did not find association, but it could be smaller sample size, I'm not sure. But my question was, did you control for religious denomination?
You know, I did.
I think that would be very interesting.
Right. So CHIS, actually, this question that was included in that survey was the only religion question. So it's very unfortunate, I think, because it's kind of based on the funding. And so the funders were only interested in kind of religion and its effect on kind of like social capital and your involvement in the community. So definitely it would be very beneficial, I think, to control and denomination.
Right.
So I'm thinking in the future probably, only looking at Latinos. If you get a certain group that, I mean,
right,
we know Latinos are predominantly Catholic.
More complicated story,
right.
But,
so it's hard when you do an overarching thing and then assume, I don't know, because
exactly.
There's lots of variation with it.
Yeah, I think it's a great study. And a question for Ms. King, you were the second presenter. It struck
Dr.
me. It struck me, I didn't hear in your presentation people talking about religious motivations, either as a barrier to, you know, fatalism, why should I worry about diabetes because, you know, God can't, or positive that, you know, my body's a temple or I want to do the right thing. So did that come out at all?
We did not hear much of that in our focus group discussions, but we have found in dealing with our populations that, you know, some people feel like, well, God allowed me to have this. So, like, when we talked about it being more acceptable, how the community didn't really view the impact of the disease as harmful, you know, people are more accepting because they feel, or more likely to feel that God allowed it.
But I was so appreciative of Dr. Quinn and Gentry. How was you backwards your name? I did that last year, I think. But talking about how the faith community, we need to really embrace the faith community fully and do that. And in the caucus, you know, we're talking about that. We always talk about faith place versus faith base. And that we're always, as public health people, designing programs and then bringing them to the church. And they say, okay, we want you to do this in 2 weeks. We want you to do this program. And, you know, so I just appreciate that. I wanted to bring that, lift that up again, so that we really need to make it a program where the faith community is really involved from the ground up and to the end. And I'm really particularly interested in working with the youth, because, right, you know, we're always saying that the youth are the future of tomorrow. We do that in our churches, but then we leave them out in terms of designing any kind of programs and things. So I appreciate that, and I'll be looking at that kind of information for what I'm going to be doing in the future. And then with Dr. Robinson, I was thinking about that whole point about that denial. And I've been working on some projects like that, where they understand the, you know, why, you know, the symptoms, right? They understand that, but they don't really think that those symptoms really apply to them individually. It's like, well, yeah, I guess I could have a piece of cake, or I guess I could do this. And so that is, it's just interesting, you know, how did people finally come to the realization, you know, that they really have to come, bring those two things in sync, that they can't be in denial and they have to understand, you know.
Well, it seems that those who participate in the programs and in working in the support groups and hearing how things actually work, and we heard it from a lot of those who saw the impact of the disease on others and how the disease could really take them down, and they observed their behaviors, you know, continue to eat what they want and, you know, think that the medications would just fix the problem. They saw that it wasn't working. So when they started practicing the behaviors taught in the workshops, they saw how it had a much better impact on their disease. And so now those people are more willing and interested in taking that message out to their families. Because a lot of them said that they saw it quite frequently in their families. You know, they feel like, oh, it's in our family line. You know, we just have diabetes. And they say when they go to programs, the people didn't understand the impact of diabetes, and they would serve, you know, the oversweetened drinks and all these unhealthy desserts. But now that they're learning and becoming more aware, they see that that doesn't work. And so they're sharing the message now with others about how they have to be accountable for their own health. Yeah.
Any questions?
I have a question. My office is actually kind of, I guess, for Dr. Quinn or anybody. We're trying to develop a faith and public health kind of mini-series to bring faith leaders and public health leaders together and talk about how they can work together. I'm actually curious if there is some type of curriculum that's available or accessible to look at for this type of educational series that we're trying to develop. I don't know if any, this is kind of a question that can be addressed to anybody.
I don't know if there's a particular curriculum, but if you remember when I was saying when we went about it, we looked at the literature to look at best practices, and
right.
We actually had to go outside of our interest area just to look at the faith community and lessons learned, challenges in general. But I would say for us, like I put those two slides up, before you bring them together, what worked for us was to do a sort of a sensitivity check-in with each one of them apart. So that, because if you don't, they're going to bring all of that to this place, to the forum. So we sort of met with them separately before we all come together.
Okay. If I could, I would just mention that there is a monograph commissioned by the Centers for Disease Control at ncdiabetes.org. It's a project that I've read. This is also faith-based. I wouldn't say that there's any one curriculum that you can use,
right,
but it surely speaks to the sensitivity issues and what you must consider if you are going to implement a faith-based initiative.
Okay. Thank you.
In the Journal of Health Social Practice for the Society for Public Health Education in November, December publication is going to be an article about working with faith-based schools.
Funding, you know, are dual factors in sustainability. And I'm always getting up at meetings, wherever, talking about the need for those two things, so that particularly for the faith community. A lot of times there's not a lot of funding around, those of you who may have some, who work with faith community. And so, you know, even when we do lay health promoters training or just any kind of programs, it's the funding piece always gets left out. And so we say to the church, okay, now you're trained, we want you, you've got all this education, we want you to do this program or do whatever it is, but there's never any money. So I thank you for that, you know, that comment, because I'm always talking about sustainability in terms of faith community. Not that money is the end all, but they need help. Sometimes they need help to really sustain those programs, you know, at their churches.
And we found that the combination was very powerful
mm-hmm.
for sustainability. Money alone or training alone mm-hmm. wasn't giving us that yield that the combination gave us.
Thank
okay.
you. Did you have a question? Oh, okay. So I want to, in a quick closing, again, I want to thank you all for supporting the Caucus on Public Health and the Faith Community, and thank you again. And let's give them one more hand. And I do have a quick announcement. I wanted to let you know that the chair of the caucus was here earlier, and I don't know if anybody got this, but we do have some schedules, and we do have the mission statement. Maybe they're behind me. Yeah, that's why they're behind me. Okay, the mission, if anybody's interested, of the Caucus on Public Health and the Faith Community, and we also have our schedules, and we also have a membership. And I just quickly want to say that the Caucus on Public Health and Faith Community of APHA is about 16 years old now, and what we're trying to do is to enhance the collaborations between the faith community and public health, and really trying to, next year, the theme is prevention and wellness through the lifespan. And we have been talking about a lot about the faith as a cultural competence in our group, trying to look at that, and we need help thinking through that, because we, in public health, we always talk about the holistic and the five dimensions of health, but we always leave out the spirit. A lot of times, you know, we do, but how to integrate that and really and embrace that as a part of what it takes to be healthy is what this caucus is all about. And so we thank you. Over the years, we've had such wonderful attendance in all of our sessions and our round table. It's always a lot of attendance, and our poster sessions on Wednesday morning over in the convention center. So I want to just thank you all for supporting the caucus. Tonight is our business meeting at 6:30 in this room. If you're interested in coming to talk with us more about the work of the caucus and how we might just lift up a little bit more of the issues around integration of faith and public health. So I want to thank you. If you want to come and get some of this information or have some more dialogue with our speakers, I thank you. Thank you so much.